Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Please take your seats quickly, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Tennis Weekly with Joel and Kim, sponsored by DownloadTennis.com. On today's US Open quarterfinal catch-up,
TFO sends Rafa packing,
Garcia's renaissance continues,
and Kyrgios crashes out to Khachanov.
Chris, today is the 7th of September. We are here to catch up on the quarterfinal action at Tennis Weekly HQ. We have been left in charge again, unsupervised, without Joel, who is still away in Spain, busy working hard in the Spanish sun. But we can't have done too bad a job the other day because he's let us do another pod together.
I know.
So, how are you doing today? You doing all right this Wednesday night?
I'm all good. It's timed quite nicely for us. We've just seen the completion of Rublev TFO. So looking forward to unpacking that one. But everything good this side. I think that Joel has put a lot of trust in us. And I'm not sure he would have done if he was in the country. But we have not made a mess of it. And that's all we can ask for.
Don't speak too soon.
Oh, I know, I should have said that.
Downhill from here. let's just reflect quickly on the TFO Rublev match, actually, because it's literally just ended. Three straight sets. TFO is into the semi-finals. Rublev has still not won a quarterfinal at a Grand Slam. He must be thinking, what do I have to do to get over that hurdle?
My goodness.
But yeah, two tie breaks, and then it was 6-4, I think, in that third set. So yeah, TFO absolutely fantastic, really doing it with such style today, and just seemingly confident and kind of just getting the job done when it mattered. That second set tiebreak he won to Love, and that could have been a pivotal moment. If Rublev had got that set and leveled up the match, this, you know, we'd still be playing, and it could very well be a different story, perhaps. But yeah, Francis TFO finally, I want to say coming of age, but I guess finally living up to some of the hype and potential.
I mean, I think he's just so inspired by that Rafa match. I think that was one of those moments when have you ever experienced anything like that? And he said it was kind of the best he'd ever played. It was the best moment of his tennis career. It's an incredible story. And you just think with the support of the American crowd, the moment is clearly his. He kind of brushed Rublev aside in that match, which none of us were really expecting. I think we ended the podcast, Kim, not to remind you, we ended thinking this was Rublev's best chance of a semi-final that he's had so far, because he's not playing Medvedev. I think he's played him like something like four times in quarterfinals since he's started making them. So TFO, he's the second quarterfinal and he's won from two, which is pretty good considering Rublev's record.
Yeah, exactly. He knows when to take his opportunities. And Rublev, once again, coming up short when, you know, he really needs to get that extra something, doesn't he, to get over that sort of that line of quarterfinals. So he'll be having to go back and reflect yet again on what it is that he is lacking.
It might be the second serve, Kim. I was listening to some of the commentary and it said that he has the biggest differential between his first and second serve. And I thought, surely that's Andy Murray. But turns out there's a 31 mile per hour difference between his first and second serves on average, which is kind of shocking, really, when you think about it.
That is quite a lot, isn't it? That's quite a drop, So yeah, I think, or at least, you know, at least he knows, hopefully he's self-aware.
Maybe he listens.
What it is that he needs to do. It's better than not knowing. I'm sure he'll be taking on all the advice needed. But I mean, Francis TFO, as well, backing up that win over Rafa, because a lot of players, you know, have a big win, the win of their life. They beat one of the greatest of all time. They so easily succumb in the next round to whoever it is, and they sort of just can't perform at the same level again. But TFO's obviously taken that win and it's given him the world of confidence. So, you know, it's absolutely fantastic. And in that match against Rafa, you know, we didn't cover the end of it because we were recording as it was kind of ongoing the other day. But, you know, TFO won that in four sets. And really, you know, the win of his life, as you said. And Rafa, I don't think was at his best, like physically or mentally, really. So he's going to take a break now, needs to go back home to Mallorca to fix things that he said. He's not sure when he's going to be ready to come back again. And, you know, you could tell he was being quite tentative as a result of the kind of, you know, rehab after the ab injury he had at Wimbledon. But that's not to take anything away from TFO, because he was definitely not someone you wanted to be playing fit or unfit. You know, TFO was definitely a worthy winner at the end of that one.
I think he's putting it together for the first time. He's always showed so much potential, as we've said already, but it's always felt like there's the, not necessarily an immaturity, but there isn't kind of a seasoned professionality when it comes to the long matches. He quite often gets drawn into them, but doesn't often get the result that you think he should probably get, or a lot of them seem to go the other way for him. I remember that match against Murray, I think it was in Mexico, where, I mean, it was, you thought TFO was going to win it kind of almost throughout. It was super close. I think one of the longest three set matches that there has been on the tour, and he kind of ended up on the wrong side of that. And there's been a history of that. So for him to put it together in New York, I mean, I'm sure he wouldn't mind a few of those tight losses during the year if it ends up with, well, you never know, could be his first major.
I mean, that would be some surprise, because I don't think many people had him down at the start of the tournament, because, you know, historically he hasn't really fulfilled his potential, maybe. But I mean, it seems to be not anyone's game, but there is going to be a first time US Open men's singles champion, isn't there? Oh, and women's singles champion, actually. So on both sides, we're going to have a new US Open champion. And obviously that's because Rafa lost, but also Marin Cilic lost in the fourth round. Another match that was late at night that we didn't cover. In fact, this match was still going on when I woke up the morning after we recorded. And it was sort of halfway through the fifth set. And I thought, oh, blimey, you don't expect a match to kind of be going on either side of you going to bed and waking up. So it was quite amusing, really. But Carlos Alcaraz coming through 6-3 in the fifth set, so ousting the 2014 champion. One of the latest finishes in tournament history, just shy of 4 hours. And I mean, Alcaraz was not at his best. That's fair to say. I don't think he has really been at, you know, his best throughout the whole tournament, but he got the job done. He's got Jannik Sinner next, which is going to be the next match taking place. They're due to come on court in about 2 hours. After the women's match, a couple of hours from now. And Jannik Sinner coming through himself in a five-setter against Ivashka, also not at his best. So just sort of reflecting on those matches, Chris, where are your thoughts at just before tonight? You know, Sinner Alcaraz, they've played a few times this year. I've had some interesting matches between them. So who's your money on for this one?
I think it's a tough one to call. Neither of them showed their best form, as you said. I think I was particularly surprised by how Sinner, who'd been playing pretty well in this tournament, seemed to kind of really have that dodgy match. And it's a theme that you'll see in the matches of that we talk about this podcast, that a few people, another Italian in particular, also really struggled. And I think he's very lucky to have got through that. Sinner was down in the fifth set. He was putting in just kind of, I think it was 46% of first serves. And he was kind of plagued by unforced errors. And so it's something that it's surprising he got through. He's lucky that he put in sort of his worst performance of the tournament against Ivashka rather than a higher ranked player. Whereas kind of on Alcaraz's side, he was happy with the fitness he showed and the fact that he was able to show that he could live with someone like Cilic over such a long period. So that sends a good message in that sense. But again, the numbers are pretty poor. He hit 41 unforced errors to 28 winners. And I think it was just three aces for the whole match. So he's not exactly playing the tennis that we saw at the start of the year, especially on the clay that brought so much success to him. So going into that one, I think it's a pretty level playing field. I think Sinner has the head-to-head edge. I think it's 2-1, and he's won twice this year. So I know you asked me to call it. I'm going to say it's going to go 5, and whoever is down at the start of the fifth will win it.
Ooh, down at the start of the fifth. Okay, so coming from a breakdown to...
Yes.
So So that's still hedging your bets. You're going either way, okay. But you're just predicting more the scoreline. Yeah. No, you're allowed
okay.
to do that.
That's what I'm going with this one. I need to... Okay. I thought if I sow the seeds for that, someone will be down to break at some point and maybe I won't have to come on and apologise in the next podcast.
It's right. We don't really have any hard and fast rules for Tennis Weekly predictions. But I think Alcaraz, I'm just hoping that he's figured out what it is that he needs to do against Sinner and using those two matches that they had earlier in the season to kind of work on that, build on that and finally get the win. You know, in the tournament that does matter the most, obviously the Grand Slam. So Alcaraz have still got down as my champion at the start of the fortnight I had predicted. So I'm sort of hoping that my prediction will come true. But I wouldn't be surprised if Sinner wins because, you know, he's building this very consistent platform at Grand Slams now. He's now the first male player born in the 2000s to have reached at least the quarterfinals at all four slams. He'll be hoping to go one further, of course, or several rounds further. Really, really consistent now. And he's the youngest person to have got to that point of reaching all four quarterfinals since Djokovic in 2007 to 2008. So
quite the feat.
Quite the feat and good, very good company there. I think what's good about the fact we have this matchup is that it is kind of perhaps alluding to a future rivalry between the two. You know, they're very similar age. They've already played a couple of times. And obviously, I think it's boding well maybe for the future if they're going to keep coming up against each other in these big occasions. And hopefully what we're going to see tonight will be an occasion that we'd like to see repeated. Hopefully it's going to be maybe a 5-set thriller. So
exactly, yeah, I mean,
remains to be seen.
That would be brilliant because I think their last match, it ended up with Sinner was running away with it. I think it was 2-6-1 sets, even though it was a 3-set match. So hopefully this one remains close throughout. But the thing that really surprised me when we were looking into this, preparing for this episode, was that Berrettini was the first player born in the 2000s to reach the quarterfinal at all slams. And what's mad is that he achieved that feat only this year in the Australian Open. So I think it just shows just how impressive what Sinner has done, because it's almost on a par with, you know, the big three and what they were able to achieve at such a young age, which Carlos is obviously emulating in lots of ways in terms of Rafa's trajectory. But it does beg the question that sort of the generation, or not quite a generation, but those who are kind of 4 or 5 years older than them, maybe 6 years older than them, haven't quite been able to put it together in the way that these two younger players are. So I think that kind of leads us quite nicely onto two of those players who weren't quite able to put together the cleanest of performances. What did you make of the Berrettini-Ruud match?
Oh, well, talking about Berrettini achieving that feat, like you were just saying, I think it's the 90s, I think you meant to say, Chris, not the noughties.
Did I say the noughties again?
The noughties. You've just shaved 10 years off Berrettini's age.
I've got my Dobbs wrong, haven't I? The Dobbs are all wrong.
But we got what you meant. But it's crazy, isn't it, that there were no other players, you know, born in the 90s to have achieved that feat. And then, like, suddenly it just goes to show that this younger cohort are the ones that are...
Are they better,
you know, making him
maybe, just saying? Could be.
Yeah, I think so, personally. But also, I guess, luck is on their side with the phasing out of the GOATs and the big four, just time-wise, you know, helps them. But Berrettini, who we know very consistent at slams. I was not expecting him to perform so poorly against Casper Ruud, especially not at the start of the match. I mean, he went down 6-1, 5-2 in under an hour. He just was not at the races. He got broken several times and that's quite difficult, isn't it, when he has a fantastic serve, generally very comfortable on serve. You know, he's reached the semi-finals of this tournament before, but he was just playing a pretty bad match and Casper was playing a very, very good match. So obviously that was reflected in the scoreline. And, you know, Casper Ruud, all this talk about him potentially becoming world number one, like he's one of the players that could still achieve that at the end of this tournament. And that obviously hasn't been getting to him, hasn't been affecting his nerves so far on a tennis court. He said he hasn't been thinking about it. Obviously, it's extra motivation for him, but he's just kind of thinking about the match and not obsessing over the possibility of world number one. because maybe he's like a bit like us. We kind of thought, ah, oh, that seems a bit far off, far-fetched. So maybe he was also just not expecting that to be a possibility.
I mean, we
so
had no idea happen, he could be number one, did we, Kim? We had no idea at the start of this tournament that was a possibility.
Exactly. So he's probably, I think he was the same.
Similarly minded.
Well, it's unlikely. Yeah, exactly. He has to now reach the final I think he has to reach the final and Alcaraz has to lose before the final. And as long as Ruud reaches the final, he's
whoever
number one.
Wins if they both... get to the final is world number one as well. Yeah.
Exactly. So, I mean, that would be quite fun, wouldn't it? Winner takes all.
I would quite like that match to happen, right? I think it would just add
take the trophy and the world number one.
Adds a bit of extra excitement to it. And it means that whoever out of the two of them will be a slam winner, because if Carlos does lose before, or if one of them doesn't win the final, then we might be in a situation where we have a slamless world number one, which kind of puts this whole sort of icing on the cake for what is a very unusual year for the ATP when it comes to, and obviously WTA when it comes to ranking points. It's been a long time since we've had a slamless number one for the men, I think. Well, is that true? And Medvedev maybe was...
No.
Is that...
No, I think, did he become world number one before or after he'd won the US Open? I think it was before.
I think it was before.
It?
I think you're right on that one. So maybe we'll have another one quite quickly. But again, it tells you that there's a bit of a strange thing going on at top of those rankings at the moment.
But a lot of people will just blame Wimbledon because, I mean, Djokovic lost all those ranking points from, you know, not being able to... he did defend his title, but he wasn't able to rankings wise. But then people will also say, well, Djokovic isn't here to defend his final points from last year. That's because he's not vaccinated. So it's not just Wimbledon's fault. It's also maybe Djokovic's own fault. And that's why we've got this strange situation where Casper Ruud can suddenly become world number one. So it's a whole host of factors.
Yeah, I mean,
isn't it?
One minute, Kim, you're losing to Ben Shelton in the first round of Cincinnati in straight sets. The next one, you're world number one in ATP rankings.
Yeah, it just goes to show, don't look too much maybe at pre-tournament form.
Yeah.
I mean,
I've learned that lesson.
In some ways you
can. Yeah.
Caroline Garcia proving that pre-tournament form very much should be looked at, but Casper Ruud from Cincinnati, not at all. So yeah, it is the joys of the sport, how different things can... you know, it means that our predictions have not featured Casper Ruud, basically, probably, because we probably saw that result and thought, oh, yeah, he's not predicting him to go deep at this one. But, you know, he's reached French Open final and we know that he's obviously excelled, therefore, to get to that stage before of a slam. Why shouldn't he at this tournament? Even though, you know, originally, I think, you know, and perhaps still to some extent, he does have that mantle of being more of a clay courter. I don't think that's relevant. He's obviously very accomplished on a hard court and arguably he's going to do better at a hard court slam than a clay court slam, potentially quite soon.
I mean, that could happen. And it looks like ever since Nick Kyrgios, I think he said that Casper was only getting ranking points. He was playing all of those sort of 250s in Europe last year. And he said the similar thing about PCB being a clay court specialist. It's almost like they're winning to prove him wrong.
Exactly. And it would have been quite interesting because... Kyrgios's potential draw could have included both PCB and Casper Ruud, both players he's had a bit of, he said those comments about. When in all reality, Kyrgios didn't play PCB. He had to play Karen Khachanov, who has beaten him. Nick Kyrgios is out. And this came as some surprise to me when I woke up and I saw the scoreline, because for me, after Rafa went out, and I think for a lot of people, Kyrgios was seen as, he's going to win it now, surely. Like the way he's been playing, this newfound professionalism. But maybe that got to him because he was, you know, he wasn't at his best, wasn't pretty tennis. Losing 6-4 in the fifth set. I mean, it was a close match, you know, 7-5, 4-6, 7-5, 6-7, 6-4 to Karen Khachanov. But Nick Kyrgios, I think, is going to be ruining this opportunity. You know, he said he's quite devastated. He knew what an opportunity this was, and perhaps that did get to him. It was a weight on his shoulders, thinking, this is my chance to finally get that slam, which I imagine he realized how much he did want it after the Wimbledon final. So I mean, do you think that this is a real massive missed opportunity? Do you think it did get to him in the end?
I think it's a very different situation being kind of the underdog, the bad boy of tennis in some ways at Wimbledon and coming through to the final and giving Djokovic a great game to coming into this slam where people are obviously talking about his form, but suddenly he was the main talking point. And that shifts your thinking. It can't not really. And we talked about it on the last episode that how will he handle it? And I don't think he handled it too well. I think he's talking about his professionalism and we've commented on this throughout the tournament. He's talking about how much he wants it, how much he wants it for his team and how long his team have been away from home. And it feels like that's adding so much pressure that he's putting all of the pressure on this big tournament. And he said that he kind of has to wait until the Australian Open. But you feel like for him, it's about finding a balance. I'm not sure that kind of the slams are the be all and end all for him. I think it's about also finding a sustainable way of continuing to keep up the level he's shown across the last few weeks. And if it is the slams where he's able to peak, that's fantastic. But it seems like there was too much pressure on him to perform for the people around him that he really cares about, as opposed to the pressure of everyone else. But it was an unusual result because none of us really saw it coming. And it was on his racket. He just wasn't making those shots that when he went for broke on the last couple of matches he's played that he was making. And he did not handle it particularly well, which is obviously not that surprising. But he said credit to Karen because he was a fighter, he's a warrior. But it felt like he kind of just said that he was outlasted in that match, which isn't giving your opponent that much credit. But I was a bit disappointed, if I'm honest, when I saw the result, because I thought that this might be the time when we get to see him sort of really come and shine and have that moment.
Yeah, it almost feels a bit of a regression after the Wimbledon final. And maybe you sort of start to question whether he will ever do it.
Yeah.
But I mean, yeah, he's still young.
It's a learning
still
curve.
Maybe early days. It's a big learning curve. We'll have to see if his newfound professionalism and attitude to the game continues, or if he maybe goes a bit off the rails after this disappointment. And perhaps I probably sound like I'm being really judgmental about his character and his attitude, but I just think that I hope that for his sake he can have a professional response to this disappointment as well.
He didn't take it that well on the night.
No,
he did do an iconic feat that I hadn't necessarily seen before, where he smashed not only one racket, he then went into his bag to get another racket to give that one a good go. So I think it's, I don't think it was a graceful exit from the tournament, but at least it shows that he cares. Is that what we can take from it?
I suppose that's one way of looking at it, rather than thinking, oh, that's just a disrespectful.
It's pretty disrespectful though, I guess.
Wasting rackets. But I mean, we've seen him do many a racket smash before. I mean, no, like, I think, like, obviously the focus is on, oh, Kyrgios lost, but we do have to obviously talk about Karen Khachanov, because again, I mean, we've got this semi-final now between Khachanov and Ruud, both of whom didn't have much form coming into the tournament. I mean, Khachanov lost, I think, first round in Cincy. He also lost early in Washington, and just like not great results. So there's nothing really to suggest that he was going to go deep.
Yeah, there wasn't much form, was there,
into the US Open? So it's you know, I think it's a surprising semi-final.
He played well though, I'd say. Like, he played well in a different way that I've seen from him before. Previously, I think when he won Paris and when he first came onto the tour, it was about the big hitting, the big shot making, and he played where he served very, very well. I think he hit 30 aces, but his movement was the thing that I was most impressed by. I don't think I've ever seen him move that well. I don't think we've ever talked to him as being a fantastic mover, but I think physically he looked very, very fit, and he was using the athleticism that he has in a much sort of more effective way than we've seen him in the last couple of weeks. Because, I mean, losing to Seb Korda on Seb Korda's return from injury in straight sets was just, that's obviously a low point, and not even being competitive in some of the matches where he's gone out. So again, is this it saying, Kim, that we should rip up the form book? Does this make collector set even harder? It's a lottery.
Yeah, well, I mean, yeah, it's Karen, yeah, like you said, I think the form book is just irrelevant sometimes, and it's maybe knowing someone's potential and what they have done. Like you said, he has won a Masters event back in the day. We know on his day he has a devastatingly good game, but it's just we haven't seen it very much when it matters from him. So going into this, we were going with Kyrgios as the form book, you know, as all his performances over the summer would have suggested. So, yeah, we've been left with a very unexpected, perhaps, semi-final. But I think, you know, with a tournament that doesn't have Djokovic in, a tournament that where Rafa's lost early on, so has Medvedev, this is such a great opportunity now for whoever goes forth, whether that's Francis Tiafoe, Casper Ruud, Karen Khachanov, Sinner / Alcaraz. What a fantastic opportunity. And it's going to be, you know, credit to whoever finally grabs it. And I mean, for me, I kind of feel that, I don't know, out of Sinner and Alcaraz, they're the two that I would have felt would be the first to claim a Grand Slam. But obviously, out of all of them, Casper Ruud is the most experienced at a Grand Slam. So it's an interesting scenario, I suppose. And to some tennis fans, it will be a more interesting scenario than just seeing Nadal and Djokovic. They might be sick of that. They might be relishing Ruud and Khachanov. So, you know, it's the start of the new era, I suppose.
Well, it's definitely an exciting slam. I think most people are pretty excited to see what there have been great matches. There's great stories. The TFO story is fantastic. And you look at some of the stories here, like the race for number one, that's also something that does drum up a lot of excitement. And seeing someone atop of the rankings that isn't one of the same people, I think that will also be exciting for many. So as you say, I think it's been a real changing of the guard US Open in terms of the presence of the big three being so kind of diminished in this sense here. That I think hopefully, and obviously we've seen something slightly different with Thiem when he won and obviously was injured and wasn't able to back it up kind of before he became injured. Hopefully whatever happens here, we have a new force at the top of the game, or several new forces at the top of the game that can give us some of the highlights and some of the highs that we've had over the years with the big three.
Yeah, and this will be the third year in a row, I suppose, where we have a new US Open men's champion, because
yes,
we had Dominic Thiem, we had Daniil Medvedev. So this is the tournament that crowns, I think, a debutant, you know,
a
champion.
Cilic in 2014.
Yeah. So more often than not, you know, it's the one that we get the new champion rather than something like Wimbledon, which obviously has been so dominated, and Roland Garros, of course, by the respective counterparts. Let's have a quick break now, Chris. We'll be back shortly in the second half to discuss all of the action from the women's side of the draws and also to do an all-important collector set update. So do not go anywhere. Welcome back to our US Open quarterfinal catch-up, sponsored by DownloadTennis.com. And now we're going to move on to looking at the women's draws from the quarters at the US Open. We've had a quarterfinal already today, which has been Sabalenka and Pliskova. Yesterday, we had Ons Jabeur versus Tomljanovic, and we had Caroline Garcia versus Coco Gauff. I'm going to lead on Caroline Garcia here, Chris, because this was the
You've
one we were
to.
Earmarking.
You've got to.
We have to. 13 straight wins now. This is just continuing her impressive summer. And I don't really have words. It's just so nice to see her finally make the semi-finals of a Grand Slam. This is the first time she's at this stage. I don't think everyone can quite believe that she's finally putting this sort of form together. I know she's won premier titles in the past, but to do it at a slam and to do it so seemingly comfortably as well, she hasn't dropped a set, and we haven't really seen that kind of usual like nervousness that we get with her game, that fragility. She's just been all out attack, and it's great. I'm loving it.
She just hasn't blinked, has she? She's just kept hitting the cover off the ball. And it feels like the big question you have is kind of what was happening in the interim for when she reached world number four? Where was it, like a loss of belief, or was it something else? Because I know there's some advice she was given by different coaches to say to kind of rein in her shot making, because it was a bit Kvitova like in the sense that sometimes she was making it, sometimes she wasn't, and at times you're going to have off days. But I mean, to handle Coco, who has been playing really well and is one of the best retrievers, she moves so quickly, and to hit as many winners as she did and to come through the manner that she did in straight sets, I don't think any of us, well, not that we didn't think it would happen, but I think we thought that there would be more in the way, potentially, in the sense of Coco putting up more resistance, but not even the US crowd could cause a problem. In fact, it kind of seemed to give her a bit more of a buzz. And in her press conference, she sounds so level-headed. And it is very Raducanu-esque in many ways, this whole run that she's put together. Now she's on 13, but, you know, she qualified in Cincinnati, and then she's just managed to keep going. And I'm not sure that we've had other players who've done well in Cincinnati. Like, I know that Azarenka, when she got to the final and then she lost to, in 2020, then lost to Osaka, she won the title in Cincinnati and her form's come through, but not in the same way that Garcia has. She's just dominated. Are you drawing comparisons that are being made between Ami Mauresmo and Mary Pierce? Is this a...
Oh, well, all of the stats are coming out now, aren't they? You know, who was the last French woman to get to this stage, you know, to make the US Open semifinals? When was the last time we had a French singles Grand Slam champion?
Not that, that long, Marion was it? Barsley. Yeah, not that long.
Well, that was, yeah, Barsley at Wimbledon. I think, yeah, Amélie Mauresmo and Mary Pierce were the last to get to this stage of the US Open. I mean, I don't really want to get too ahead of myself, but she is genuinely playing such good tennis.
The best tennis in the draw, I would say.
Yes, I would say the most sort of convincingly impressive tennis. And I mean, Coco Gauff, you know, summed it up quite nicely. I thought she just said, you know, because Garcia is so aggressive, like standing on top of the baseline and ripping those balls, she just said it's so hard to adjust to. And, you know, it's, you're just kind of up against it from the word go. And I mean, Coco Gauff went four love down at the start of that match, and she managed to get one of the breaks back. But, you know, it was a similar situation in the second set. She instantly went a break down and was just never able to make inroads, you know, from that sort of early deficit. So, but what we've normally seen with Garcia, she lets lead slip, and you're sort of always waiting and expecting that to happen, which may be slightly unfair, but we've just seen a lot of that over the years. So it's just refreshing that she's sort of playing with such confidence. And I think that is because she just is going back to kind of her instinctual way of how she wants to play the game, which is to be
just don't think
aggressive.
About it. Whatever you do, Caroline, don't yeah. think about it.
Do not overthink. And that, I suppose you could have that motto across your life generally.
Yeah,
you know,
just don't overthink it.
Don't get anxious and overthink everything. Just
you're not
go
at
the
US Open. You're just on a tennis court.
Yeah. So I think, yeah, I mean, obviously going into the semi-final, she's got Ons Jabeur, who came through against Ayla Tomljanovic. This could have gone to three sets. Tomljanovic was 5-3 up in that second set, but Jabeur was able to bring it back, take it in a tie break. I think Tomljanovic was slightly struggling with a leg injury as well. Mm. But yeah, Ons Jabeur hasn't been at her best, but she said at the start of the tournament that she really wanted to get to the semi-finals, and that would be like an achievement for her after, I guess, like the disappointment of not winning that Wimbledon trophy. And so I think she's sort of outdone her own expectations for the tournament, so I guess anything from here on in is kind of a bit of a bonus, really. And she's, you know, she's a tough cookie. It's not going to be easy for Garcia, even though she is playing incredibly well. And I don't know, I mean, it is the first time Garcia is going to be in a Grand Slam semi. Obviously Jabeur was at that situation at Wimbledon, so I'm still, obviously, I want Garcia to win, but...
You're not counting your chickens.
I'm not, yeah. I'm not going to go in expecting anything, because Jabeur is going to be very, very tricky.
Mm. Yeah, I think it would be a great matchup. I think Jabeur, she played a pretty comprehensive first set and the second set. She was kind of putting it together at the start, and then she just had one of those sort of mental lapses that she sometimes has. And I think it's impressive that she was able to regroup and bring it back. But I think it was, I mean, it was very unusual to see someone serve kind of as badly as she did. She only had 41% of serves in play. So if she did borrow Serena's serve, she definitely returned it before this match started.
Serena only gives it out for one match at a time.
Maybe that means Serena's playing in Australia if she wants it back.
There's a rule.
But no, I think it's obviously great that she's made two quarterfinals in a row. She could be the sort of player where there'll be a lot of variety coming at Garcia's racket. And that might be something that could put her off her usual stride in terms of ripping balls. But I think it's going to be a good matchup. They know each other well. And I think they're both in the mindset of enjoy the moment. That's kind of how I see it, and see, especially when you play with someone who you know kind of as well as they do, and they're the same age, they've been on the tour for a long time. I think Garcia told a nice anecdote about playing in the semifinals of the French Open in juniors, and she said she'd never seen anyone hit so many drop shots, so at least nothing's changed there. But she'll be ready for it. So lots of experience playing each other, and I think it will be a nice occasion where hopefully it will bring out the best in them both. That's all you can hope for, really, when it comes to players like Ons and Garcia. You've got a feel for Tomjanovic, though. She's had such a great tournament, but I think she just keeps getting Grand Slam quarterfinals, but doesn't go up the rankings. I think she said in her post-match interview that if Wimbledon had offered points, that she'd be ranked inside the top 25, almost in the top 20, which obviously that would be a career high for her as well. And so it's this sort of, she's still fighting to try and be in the top 30. And especially when you aren't getting that sort of payback from your results. I think it's left her with a slightly bittersweet feeling coming out of New York. But it's a running theme that the ranking points have caused kind of disarray in the draw and in terms of players. But we have to mention how fantastic Tomjanovic's run has been here, and how she's backed up with two quarterfinals in a row. It's really quite an achievement.
Yeah, exactly. And I think she said that she sees herself as a top 20 player. So it's just frustrating that not getting those points from Wimbledon would have elevated her up the rankings and given her, you know, that kind of extra temporary security and sort of comfort, I guess, of being higher ranks and getting in and seedings and whatnot. So it is a shame. She's one of those players that is quite impacted by the Wimbledon decision. Along with a few others, and obviously we were talking earlier about the ramifications for the you know, world number one on the men's side. So it's just another outcome of that.
Not quite as big stakes with the top 20 for Ala Tomjanovic versus the number one of the men's ATP.
Yeah.
But Kim, I was going to ask you a question. If you had to guess who Ons Jabeur's tennis hero was, if it wasn't Serena Williams, who would you have said?
Oh, blimey!
Someone with some variety, maybe. Potentially,
well, some variety. Yeah, someone. I'm trying to think of a crafty player, Su Wei Shea, or someone like
that. That's a great guess. In fact, it's Andy Roddick.
Andy Roddick.
Apparently, she said that she used to watch him an awful lot when she was young, and has always been her hero. So she got to meet him this week, and I think she said she admired his humour on the court, the personality. She loves his serve.
I was going to say, does she want to borrow his serve instead of Serena's?
I think she's just
now
trying to nick American serves at this rate, trying to get some of that stuff in. But she said, she asked him if he was going to be there for the rest of the tournament, and he said yes. So she said that she better keep winning. So I don't want to put this kind of as a negative for Garcia, but with the backing of Roddick and this new inspiration from her tennis hero, I mean, is this a bit like when Marion Bartoli got the backing of Piers Brosnan at Wimbledon that year? You know, you never know.
I was just thinking that, and I think Andy Roddick would be quite well. I think Andy Roddick would like that analogy, because he'd be like, "Oh, I'm James Bond."
Yeah.
I assume he's there for like tennis.
I think he's
commentary.
Working the event. Yeah, I do. Yeah,
yeah.
He's not just in a box, but maybe he will for the final.
Oh yeah. Well, that might put her off.
Might put Caroline Garcia off. Who knows?
Does she harbour a sort of, you know, longings for Andy Roddick as well?
Someone needs to ask her, clearly. The impact he had on WTA is much more than we ever could have known.
Yeah, well, I mean, Roddick, actually, I don't know if I've ever revealed this on the podcast. Before I started following Rafa, Roddick was the person that I tended to support.
Really?
Probably because of all those Wimbledon finals that he should have won.
You and Ons both. Yeah.
I know. Yeah. Well, Joe, honestly. but yes, no, Jabeur Garcia is lined up for tomorrow. We've also got Arina Sabalenka in the semi-finals because she came through against Pliskova 6-1, 7-6 today. So yeah, obviously the first set was pretty much one way, second set a lot different. And she got it done, yeah, on that tie break. So a bit more of a straightforward win today. She'd had previously to come back, you know, against Danielle Collins. But yeah, Sabalenka, her serve firing much better today than it has been. As we know, she's had some real issues with especially double faults this year and her serve. So she definitely made reference to that being a big improvement. But yeah, I think she's, you know, she was at the semi-finals of Wimbledon last year, wasn't she? And we haven't seen her at that stage since.
She hit semis at the US last year. So she's managed to defend.
Oh, US last year.
She had a strong end of the year last year, I'm pretty sure, for the two semi-finals. Mm. But she's backed it up. And I think this is unfortunately the moment we have to say that Joel did actually think that she would make it to the semi-finals. But I was going to say, in case he does listen carefully to this episode, was he still thinking that when she was 6-2, 5-1, down against Kai Kanepi in round two? I think maybe not, but no.
What?
Yes.
What must Kai Kanepi be thinking? Oh, it could have been me, or I could have done. I mean, she failed to do what she normally does, which is upset a top seed. So
that's the strength of Sabalenka.
Shocker.
She's broken the curse. Maybe shocker. Now the curse is lifted.
Yeah. But, well, I mean, it's very impressive, 6-2, 5-1, now to be in the semi-finals.
The belief. So, I mean, I think it could free people up. And we didn't talk about this with Khachanov, but it did look like, and obviously this is quite early to say an upset, but it did look like Jack Draper was kind of getting the best of him. So maybe these players feel like they've got a second wind. I know that Kerber won Wimbledon from, I think she was match point down the year that she won it in an early round. So maybe it just loosens you up. But
it does happen. Yeah. It does happen.
It's each match is different, I guess, and you've got to prepare for it a different way. But the serve was so much better. I mean, it was the thing that got her through this match so easily, as well as, I guess, Pliskova not playing her best. But it's a far cry from 39 double faults in two matches, just the three for this, which was less than Pliskova. So that must be, well, I mean,
reassuring.
It must be, right?
For her.
Yeah, exactly. And we haven't really seen her play her best tennis, I don't think, in some of the later stages of Grand Slams, well, for a while, as you said. So that would be an interesting one, because she did have, I think she had some good, she had a good match against Iga earlier this year on the clay. So if Iga makes it, not saying she will, but I think it might make it for a more competitive semi than obviously Pliskova, who did have that famous double bagel in Rome last year. So a good result, but I'm not sure. Are we talking about Sabalenka for the title?
Oh, I don't see why not, to be honest. But
it's a big game she has.
Yeah, she does have a big game, but it's, I don't know. I feel like less emotionally connected to everyone else, because obviously with Garcia, I feel like there's such a force behind her. So I feel like destiny is not sending me towards Sabalenka for the title. However, I appreciate that means absolutely nothing to the world of tennis. And that's just my like personal mindset. So it's getting late, Chris. What am I saying? I don't know where I'm going with that. But I hope our listeners understand. I mean, she does have to get past either Świątek or Jessie Pegula. They're due to play tonight.
Yes.
So they'll be kicking off in just over an hour. Świątek not being at her best. Pegula very consistent. Can she get that win over the world number one? I'm still undecided. I was undecided in our last podcast. I'm still undecided about this one. If Świątek was in her usual form, I'd be like, oh, no way, Pegula's got a chance. But I do think Pegula's got a shot there. I do think she could do it.
I was thinking about Iga earlier today, and I thought, do you remember when she won that French Open the first time? she started every match so quickly. And I think it was just like, it was a very clear mindset. And Raducanu did this a bit at the US Open last year. But Iga came out and played her biggest game in the first set. And I think she's kind of lost that mentality of starting super strong and then continuing and maybe withdrawing slightly, kind of reining it in because it's hard to keep that sort of level up. But she doesn't seem to be going on and having those sort of like signature starts where she does almost any seed of hope someone might have at playing her, she's not able to kind of dampen in that first set anymore. So I think for her to do well in this match, I think she's really got to take it on and bring that same energy that she has done previously. Because with Pegula, I think if you let her play, and we did talk about this, then she's a very competent player who could put together some good results. But I think it will take Iga not being on song or not playing at her best level for Pegula to be able to get past her. Is that a fair take, do we think?
I would say so, yeah. I think if Świątek's fully on song, Pegula, yeah, would... I think it'd be a commendable effort, but if Świątek's on, I think she's got it, but we haven't seen the best of her. So going on recent form, is she likely to bring it? She's obviously capable, but yeah, it's up in the air. So that's why I'm really quite undecided with this one. It's probably going to be a whitewash now if you've said that.
Double bagel, maybe. The bakery's back open.
The bakery
It did just reopen at the end of her last match, right?
It did. Niemeyer had a lovely, lovely bit of bread. Yeah. But yeah, let's have a look then. So tomorrow we do have the women's semi-finals. Keep thinking it's Friday tomorrow. It's not. It's Thursday. So still waiting on the exact schedule for all of those. But let's have a quick look at what's going on in the doubles, because we do have two Brits in the doubles, the men's doubles. Joe Salisbury and Rajiv Ram. They are going to be up against Cabal and Farah. And then... Neil Skupski with Wes Kuhlhoff. They are up against Arevalo and Roger. So they are due to also be playing tomorrow. So hopefully we can get two Brits in the final. And on the women's side of the doubles, Garcia actually did lose her quarterfinal with Mladenovic.
Does that affect the renaissance?
No, I think okay. A little bit of doubles. Yeah, a little bit of doubles is all right to, focus on. But too much, you might get tired, so it's all good. But we've got Melikar got married. She's Melikar Martinez now. And Perez with Krejcikova and Siniakova in one semi. And Dolheide and Sanders, they're going to be playing, potentially McNally, Townsend, or Krawczyk and Schurz. So few Americans in there for the home crowd. And then... yeah, mixed doubles. We're still kind of getting to the semi-final stage and all the Brits are out. But I've currently got a bit of Jack Sock and Leila Fernandez on the telly. So they're in action against Sanders and Piers. But we'll touch base with all the doubles results in our next episode. But that does bring us, Chris, to just a little collector set update.
No, I don't think this is going to be good for me. Is anyone doing well, Kim?
We do have two people who are potentially on to get three correct guesses, which would be the winning amount. So big shout out to Lee at Underarm A. So Lee, we know Lee, tennis on telly. and also Joanna Reiter is potentially on to get three. So it all depends on Carlos Alcaraz and Caroline Garcia for the final results. So a couple of people are completely out. I'm potentially on for two. Joel's already got two. Oh, and you're potentially on for two as well, Chris. So we could all tie.
But do I want to get two is the question.
Oh, you got Garcia as the finalist. So do you want that to be a W?
I want that to be a W. That's a tricky one.
Oh.
What does yours hinge on?
Carlos Alcaraz would need to lose tonight.
Oh, that's getting confusing.
Yeah.
Right, okay. I'd rather that happened and you got two than a Garcia final.
Yeah, I think if you're going to get to the final, you want to go all the way, don't you? So no one had picked Caroline Garcia to win. There were two people that picked her in the final. You were one of them.
You weren't one of them, Kim.
So, no, I said round three. I had a going out to had admire, I think. Oh, it should have been. Yeah, something like that.
Or was it, yeah, or Andreescu?
Well, yes, but I had thought had admire would have beaten Andreescu. But yeah, obviously that's turned out differently. So, but yeah, we'll I'll post this on our on our Twitter, and we'll do a full update after the finals. But I think that brings us to a close for our quarterfinal catch up. I think next time round it will be yourself and Joel who will have returned from his trip abroad. I'm due to be going off to Wales for the weekend, so yeah, and you've kindly stepped in, so I'm gonna try and get some Welsh rain and Arabrith and whatnot in over the weekend. But yes, listeners, we hope you've enjoyed today's episode. Do join us for our next episode for all the semi-final catch-up action. But in the meantime, you can subscribe to us on Tennis Weekly on whatever device you listen to us on. We're on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and all major podcasting platforms out there. You can also listen to us on the DownloadTennis.com app. And if you like what you're hearing, then make sure to leave us a rating and comment on Apple Podcasts or Spotify.
Follow us on social media and email the show on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. It's at Tennis Weekly Pod. You can email the show at tennisweeklypod@gmail.com or check out our website at www.tennisweekly.co.uk.
And as I said, we'll be back on Friday at Tennis Weekly HQ to catch up on all the semi-final action. So I hope you can join Joel and Chris then. But in the meantime, it's goodbye from Chris.
Goodbye.
And it's goodbye from me, and we will see you again soon.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.